Just tell them that somebody used the car and didn't fill it up, and that you want some gas money, or tell them that somebody left something in the car and you want to give it back to them.
Like what?
I don't know. Money. They're going to buy that. Well, then think of something. You're an enterprising woman. Finishing her cigarette, she turned back toward the river and flicked it into the water, where it disappeared in the mist but for a brief sizzle.
Thanks for your help.
She turned to go, but I called out to her, Look, I'm willing to do this, but if you want to know what happened to your son, I'm going to need your assistance. She lodged a hand on her hip.
Junior detective, huh?
Something like that.
I'll think about it.
Don't think too long. After Henry's race tomorrow, we're out of here. She cocked her head.
Maybe I'll just ask Henry.
You're welcome to, but I'd advise against it.
And why is that?
I gestured toward the river, and more important, the bridge. A lot of water, huh? She studied me for a moment more, and then swiveled on a heel and walked away. When I got back to the cabin, I was surprised to see one of the two Hewlett police cars preparing to back out from the spot in front of our door. Dog and I came around the left rear just as the reverse lights came on, so I tapped the quarter panel and Dougherty jerked to a stop. I leaned on the sill. How come you're not driving the new and improved MRAP?
He's calling it the Pequod. Even ordered up decals to put the name on the side. Now where did he get that name from?
Heck if I know, Troop. Better than the Andrea Doria. I checked on Dog, who was sniffing the squad car's tires. What's up?
He handed me a bulky manila envelope through the window.
This is the cell phone that was on Bodaway, or more exactly, lying in the grass where the incident took place. Sorry it's taken so long to get it to you, but I've been kind of busy.
I stuffed the envelope under my arm. Anything else?
The preliminary accident report along with the testimony of the witness.
Witness?
After the fact.
He reached up and tapped the package.
Local girl by the name of Chloe Nance. She's the one that found him.
Nance.
Why does that name sound familiar? The thought struck as the words left my lips. Related to Bob Nance, the guy that underwrote the Pequod?
Yeah, that's him. He's underwritten about half the county.
He gestured toward the manila bundle again.
Look, the phone is dead and I haven't had time to find a charger to fit it.
I pulled the device out and studied it, and was pretty sure it was similar to Henry's. I'll find a way to get it to talk, even if I have to use a rubber hose. I started to back away so that he could get going when he called after me.
So, what the hell is a Pequod?
You mean other than the ship in Moby Dick?
Yeah.
A native tribe in Connecticut, although it's spelled differently now, with a T instead of a D. By the early 20th century, there were only a little over 50 of them left.
Are they still around?
One of the richest tribes in the country. Casinos.
Good night, Troop.
Good night, Sheriff.
He backed the cruiser the rest of the way out and crunched gravel as he left.
Dog and I made our way to the cabin door, and I was surprised to find it ajar when I was pretty sure I'd closed it. Figuring it might have been Henry, I gave pause, but then slipped my .45 from the small on my back just in case. Training it through the opening, I pushed the door wide.
I thought for sure that cop was going to come in here and that would have been bad.
He was sitting on the guest chair, leaning backward against the wall, with the television on mute. In one hand he had a beer, and in the other, a 9mm semi-automatic.
Hope you don't mind, but I made myself at home.
I kept the Colt on Brady Post, the Tray-Tray Nomad Enforcer, and stepped inside, sticking a leg out to restrain the growling beast behind me.
I don't mind, but I think he does. Keep a handle on that dog or I'll shoot him.
You do? And he won't be the last one to get shot here tonight. The biker lowered the Glock and stuffed it in the front of his pants.
I figured you and I ought to get introduced.
Besides, the ice machine is broken up at the Pioneer. I waited a second and then lowered my weapon.
I thought we had been.
Not formally.
He reached into his pocket again and tossed something onto the bed near me. It was a nifty leather wallet, not unlike the one in my shirt pocket. But unlike mine, his read, Department of the Treasury.
ATF?
Special Agent Post at your service. I don't usually break cover to the locals or anybody for that matter, but you seem pretty capable, and I could use some help. Sure didn't throw any kind of scare into you at the hospital parking lot earlier today. Generally, I'm too stupid to be scared. Oh, I doubt that. Holstering my Colt, I picked up his badge and ID card. So which one is it, alcohol, tobacco, or firearms? Firearms. The nomads are responsible for about 30% of the illegal guns showing up in the Southwest these days, mostly imported from their chapters in Mexico. I sat on the bed and called Dog over. He still growled at Post, but recognized that the dynamic had changed. So the enforcer for this particular chapter happens to be a federal agent? He set the beer bottle on the nightstand, crossed the room, and closed the door. Sorry, can't be too careful these days. He crossed back and sat, reaching a hand out to Dog, who pulled back a lip, giving his interpretation of the Night of the Long Knives. Whoa, easy there. He'll warm up to you, just ignore him. I folded my fingers in my lap and looked at the man, younger than I'd thought, underneath the Buffalo Bill facial hair. So what's the deal with the kid, Bodaway? A major pain in my ass is what it is. He picked up his drink and took a long draw. Bodaway's involved in the gun trafficking. He's the conduit to all the other clubs. Gangs. Whatever. Anyway, all cats being gray in the dark, the kid is getting weapons to all the other gangs, and I've been working on his source, but so far, nada. I thought you said it was the connections in Mexico that were coming up with the guns. Until recently, we were able to motivate the Federales with all the Fast and Furious fallout, and when that source dried up, we thought we had them. But now they seem to be getting them from here in the U.S. So, you're just shadowing Bodaway to find the source? That, and some information on some other things. Been deep undercover for more than 9 months now. Like what information? I'm not at liberty to say. Lola have anything to do with it? He shook his head. I don't think so. But who the hell knows of her? Any sign that she's involved up to now? No, but she loves the little asshole, and would do anything for him, including getting you and your Indian buddy involved. Cheyenne. The three of us looked up to see Henry standing in the doorway, leaning on the jamb with his arms folded, neither of us having heard the door itself open. If you please. Henry Standing Bear meets Special Agent Brady Post. I turned to look at him as Dog sidled over to the Cheyenne Nation. Is that your real name?
No.
Do you want to tell us what your real name is?
No.
I shrugged and turned back to the bear, gesturing toward the tattooed man in the chair. ATF. Post interrupted.
Why don't you just tell everybody?
My bet is that he heard everything anyway. Henry nodded and closed the door behind him.
I heard about the guns and the fact that you have been in deep cover for the last 9 months. Amazing that you have risen as far as you have in that short amount of time.
Post gestured with a thumb toward the accessories on the back of his denim vest.
Fully patched. So, what is it you want from us?
Well, I thought it would be nice if we weren't working across purposes. He turned back to me, picked up his beer and rolled it between his hands.
Look, I know you're investigating the accident at local request, and I'm assuming also because of Lola Wojciechowski.
I shrugged again. It's still debatable as to whether we're going to take the case. Henry smiled.
We?
Post sipped his beer and studied me for a while before slowly smiling.
That why you've got a manila envelope under your arm that says Bodaway Torres?
Amazingly enough, Torres's phone fit the bear's charger. Henry plugged it in and set it on the nightstand between the beds. I studied the small screen as he stripped off his motorcycle gear. Isn't it supposed to do something?
It is probably so dead that there is no power to the screen yet.
How long does that take? He climbed in his bed in his underwear and a t-shirt.
You know, I think I'm going to buy you one of those things one of these days.
A dim red light appeared on the screen inside a graphic of a depleted battery.
It's charging.
He flipped off the reading light on his side.
It will take almost an hour to fully charge. Are you going to watch it the entire time?
Technology fascinates me. He grunted and rolled over, and I could see the road rash scrapes on his back through the thin shirt.
You do not have to keep me informed as to the progress. Good night.
Good night. Dog rested his head on the bed and looked at me. I patted the spread, and he was up in an instant, occupying a full half of the surface area. Hey, Henry.
What?
Why don't you want to help this woman?
She is a manipulator, and I do not think she has done anything in the last 30 years besides sharpen her skills.
He waited a moment before adding,
Not all fair maidens are worthy of rescue, Walt.
Maybe she is this time. He studied me over his shoulder and then, reaching out, turned off my light.
I never make exceptions. An exception disproves the rule.
I sighed, stood, and undressed, hanging my clothes on the chair by the desk. I went to the bathroom, brushed my teeth, and then stood there looking at myself, trying to figure out what to do next. Corbin Doherty needed my help. Lola Wojciechowski needed my help. Maybe even Bodaway Taurus needed my help. On the other hand, Special Agent Brady Post didn't need my help. And Henry Standing Bear didn't appear to want to be involved with anything that included V. Lola. Sometimes it was like that, I suppose. Some people become so important in your life that they're almost like a trademark. But then they're gone. Sometimes they might reappear, but they're nothing at all like what you've assembled in your mind since their departure. Sometimes you can't even stand them anymore because they break up the legend and nothing dies harder than a good personal legend. I looked at the crumbling giant in the mirror. Nowhere near as young as he used to be. Maybe if I were 30 or even 40, I might think about hanging around Hewlett, but I'm not. Plus, it was the bear's call since he knew Lola. And the bear was softly snoring in the next room, blissfully unconcerned. So tomorrow I'd watch him attempt another hill, and then we'd load up and go home. It was that simple. That, or I wanted it to be. By the time I got back to the bed, Dog was taking up a full 2/3, and I was relegated to the 1/3 left, clutching the mattress like a mountaineer in a hanging bivouac. I had just closed my eyes when I heard a buzz. Flipping the light back on, I looked at Bodaway's phone, but it was dark. Then I noticed it was Henry's cell, lying next to it, that was making noise. The bear hadn't moved, so I picked it up and stared at the screen, confirming the fact that I was in deep trouble. I hit the button and took my medicine.
So you're not dead?
I kept my voice low in an attempt to not wake the Cheyenne Nation. Nope, I escaped with my life just now.
You know, if you had called me back, I would have been worried.
Her voice took on a fake Western tone, emblematic of every bad cowboy movie made in the 40s.
The last time we encountered the good sheriff, he was at gunpoint.
Her voice slipped to serious. So who's pointing a gun at you this time? People are always pointing guns at me.
Daddy?
Lola.
There was a pause.
You don't mean the Lola?
I do.
Henry's Lola?
The one my granddaughter's named after.
Don't start.
Another pause.
I assume she's gorgeous?
In a rough roadhouse kind of way.
Oh, my.
Yep. Her son was hurt in a motorcycle accident over here. Another pause.
So, how are she and Henry?
They're not.
She laughed, that lovely, melodious laugh that reminded me so much of her mother.
Then don't you get involved.
I wasn't planning on it.
Planning has nothing to do with it.
Right.
I smiled and held the phone close, knowing full well that part of it was that she was my daughter, but also just from the sheer joy of knowing her.
Did you call just to give advice to the Lovelorn?
No, I called to make sure you didn't have any bullets in you.
I'm bullet-free. So how's my Lola?
sleeping, finally. She's a night owl. Was I like that?
I glanced at the time on the phone.
You still are.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, I thought I'd better give you a heads up. Lena said that Vic is planning on flying into Rapid City tomorrow and surprising you guys. I dropped my voice even lower.
I hope she gets in early. Henry's talking about skipping the show and shine and just heading home after the hill climb tomorrow.
He's not going to show Lucy this year?
I guess not. So hopefully Vic will get here early. I smiled into the receiver. Is my undersheriff's imminent arrival the reason you warned me about Lola?
No, I warned you because you're stupid when it comes to females of all shapes and sizes when they are in distress.
That's the second time I've been cautioned about that tonight. I tried to touch on the next subject as lightly as possible. So there's still nothing going on with the investigation in Philadelphia?
No.
And she says she misses Wyoming, but I think she misses you. I wasn't quite sure what to say to that, so I just remained quiet and listened as her tone changed yet again.
Hey, when are you coming down here to see the new digs?
Probably next week. I told Ruby that I was taking a few days off to go spend time with my family. She yawned.
Good. We miss you too, you know.
I do. Get some sleep, punk. That little one will be up soon enough.
Roger that. Love you.
Love you too. Over. She giggled.
Over.
I turned the thing off and laid it on the nightstand, just as the other phone there began vibrating. Evidently it had summoned enough energy to work. Curious as to who was trying to contact the young man, I picked it up. It had buzzed twice, which I had learned means a text message, and I stared at it for a moment, checking the date and time to see if it was old, but the date was today, and the time 2 minutes ago. Meet me at the 9th green. The sender's name had not come up, but the number was a 310 area code. I just lay there looking at the message, making sure it said what I thought it said. I hesitated, looking at the time of morning and thinking about whether I really wanted to continue being involved with this case, but then went ahead and did what I knew I was going to do, and sent back two letters in return. Okay. I guess it all comes down to the fact that I hate mysteries, and I wanted to know who had attempted a vehicular homicide on Bodaway Taurus. I quietly dressed, went to the door, and looked back at Dog. He raised his head and looked back at me, but then lowered it and didn't make another move. So much for backup. I closed the door behind me, fingered the Cheyenne Nation's keys that I'd taken from the nightstand, and walked around the cabin just in time to interrupt two scruffy-looking guys attempting to unlock Lucy, the bear's Indian motorcycle, from the trailer. The nearest one tilted his Viking helmet back, smiled, and waved as I approached.
How you doing? Good. You? Oh, we're having trouble with these locks.
He noted that I'd stopped and was watching him.
This yours?
Might as well be.
The other scruff, who was holding a tire iron, stepped back. Then you're saying we shouldn't be doing this?
If I were the real owner, you never would have heard them, and they would have found your bodies in the Belle Fouche River tomorrow morning. The one with the tire iron palmed it a few times, attempting to send a message via Morse code.
He a tough guy like you?
Tougher.
Well, how about we see how tough you are?
I sighed and looked down at the more reasonable of the two.
Look, Eddie, I'm old and tired, and if you piss me off bad enough, I'm going to have to pull this .45 I've got at the small of my back and shoot you just to show your friend how tough I am.
He studied me as his buddy started sidling to the left back of the trailer.
We know each other?
That Indian belongs to Henry Standing Bear, heads man of the Dog Soldier Society Bear Clan.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit is right.
How come I'm the one that gets shot?
I gestured toward his buddy, now coming around the back, supposedly out of my line of sight.
He looks too stupid to learn from it. But, you know, I just might be changing my mind.
I slipped the Colt from my back and turned to look at number two. He froze when he saw the semi-automatic hanging at my thigh.
Go home. Wherever it is you go, nothing good ever happens this late at night, and the two of you are liable to get killed.
Tyre Iron's mouth unfroze.
Is that a real Colt?
Yep, it is.
I gestured with my sidearm.
Go home.
I hear the jam a lot.
Not this one. I raised the weapon. I said, go home.
They left, mumbling to each other. Something about life not being fair. Figuring I'd pushed my luck, borrowing the real Lola's Cadillac all day the day before, I slipped behind the wheel of Henry's Lola and started her up. Dodging through the remaining motorcyclists, who appeared to be impervious to both exhaustion and alcohol, I made my way across town toward the only golf course I knew existed in Hewlett. The Devil's Tower Club sits on a private mesa above the town, which gave me the first indication as to who might be attempting to contact Bodaway. I turned the vintage bird and trailer in a broad arc, lined up in the diagonal parking at the center of the lot, and killed the engine. To my right was what I assumed to be the clubhouse, a beautiful, if predictable, structure of stone and massive logs. There were no other vehicles, just a few carts parked near the building. I quietly got out of the T-Bird and walked over to a large, hand-engraved map to look for the ninth green. It was the red moon that shone across the clipped fairway, and I struck off, careful to stay on the cart path in the shade of the conifers. I climbed a rise, and when I got to the top, I could see someone standing under a tree by a water hazard, and I listened as the frogs croaked at each other. A trail cut through the tree so that I would come up behind whoever it was. I stopped about 50 yards away and studied the figure long enough to know that it was female. Got a little closer and noticed she was wearing a set of earbuds, her head bobbing to the music. So much for stealth. I stepped to the side and raised a hand, trying not to scare her.
Howdy.
I needn't have bothered with that either. She screamed loud enough to be heard by Mount Rushmore. I held up my hands in surrender. Hey, it's okay. She had an arm in a sling, but managed to yank the earbuds out to scream at me some more.
Who the hell are you?
Sorry, my name is Walt Longmire.
You scared the shit out of me.
I folded my arms over my chest to show her I didn't mean any harm, meanwhile studying the extraordinarily beautiful young woman.
Sorry. Where's Bodaway?
It seemed like an odd question. As far as I know, he's still in a hospital room at Rapid City Regional.
He's still in the hospital?
I stared at her. Well, yes. I was under the impression that you were a witness to the accident.
Who told you that?
Corbin Dougherty, the officer here in Hewlett.
And who are you again?
Absaroka County Sheriff Walt Longmire. She didn't seem impressed and swiped a long lock of blonde from her face.
And where the hell is that?
About 2 hours from here.
Wyoming?
Yep. I studied her in return. You're not up too much on Wyoming geography, are you?
I'm from California, and I don't give a shit.
Fair enough.
Excuse me, but do you know who I am?
I was under the assumption that you are Chloe Nance.
Yeah, but do you know who I am?
One of the great trials in law enforcement is the do-you-know-who-I-am question, which pops up every now and again. Usually it's a county or city councilman from somewhere else, or a state representative, but I didn't think she fit the bill. Bob Nance's daughter?
Well, that's one thing. And do you know who he is?
Not really. I took a step past her and looked out at the picturesque scenery, only partially marred by little flags and golf ball washers. Look, Miss Nance, are you a witness to Bodaway Taurus's accident? She tried to fold her own arms, but then remembered the sling.
Why should I talk to you about it?
I'm assisting the investigating officer. She sighed and looked away.
My father says I'm not supposed to say anything to anybody, that it'll just lead to trouble with those people.
Well, seeing as how you're an eyewitness to what may or may not have been an attempted homicide, I can get a subpoena, and we can have this conversation down at the Hewlett Police Headquarters or the Crook County Sheriff's Office.
I found him, okay? I didn't witness anything.
On the side of the road?
Yeah.
Was he alone?
Yeah.
I turned and looked at the young woman. Can you give me an indication as to what kind of condition he was in?
What do you mean?
Was he conscious, unconscious?
He was unconscious.
Did he have anything with him on the motorcycle that you saw lying around? Saddlebags or anything like that?
She took a long time to answer. No.
I looked pointedly at her injured arm. Was there anybody else on the motorcycle with him?
No.
I gave her the long pause I'd learned from Lucian, the one that crept like an epoch-eating glacier, just to let her know I had my suspicions. Then I guess I've got only one.